through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, you guys already know what this is. It's our draft profile. We've been doing free agent profiles, profiling departing Seahawks free agents, profiling potential free agent signings. One of those, by the way, Akello Witherspoon ends up signing. Kerry Hyder ends up signing. Pretty good profiles there. Now, this time, we've been previewing potential draft picks for the Seattle Seahawks. They have just three picks. And so all of these picks Jake is looking at are ones that are within the realm of possibility. So if Seattle were to pick at 56, maybe trade up, maybe do whatever. But he's not going to be profiling guys that are going like 1, 2, 3, 4 in the draft. He's previewing guys.
No, we ain't wasting our time.
We're not wasting our time or your time. We're looking at guys. We're looking at names that you can realistically, Seahawks fans, be watching in the draft later this month. So, that being said, let's get to today's Seahawks draft profile on cornerback Ifeatu Melifonwu.
This is Jake and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run.
Let's go!
Draft profile.
Heading to the East Coast for this one with roots in Massachusetts and a college career in New York. Now, if you recognize the name, it's because Ifeatu's older brother, Obi Melifonwu, does currently play for your NFC West division foe, San Francisco 49ers, so you probably recognize that name. Now, Obi played for UConn, the UConn Huskies, but Ifeatu told ESPN's Boston that he wanted to carve out his own path, so he took another route, instead committing to play for Syracuse. Now, when he was at high school in Grafton, Massachusetts, you guys have seen a kid like this. He played a number of positions, and we've all seen that kid. He's the one who can play at option quarterback. Oh, he can play a wide receiver. Oh, he can play running back, because at any moment, he's one of the most dominant, best athletes on the field. You're looking at that kid and you're like, that kid's going pro. That was Ifeatu. I'm going to guess that was also his brother, Obi Melifonwu. So he commits to play for Syracuse, here to give us a profile. I'm talking like height, weight, all the statistics you guys need to know, but also the kind of player he is. Jake, tell us everything.
Great. Great job, by the way.
I do what I can.
Talking through those names like it was nothing.
Thank you so much.
Now, one of the more fun names to say, Ifeatu Melifonwu. Now, as you look at Ifeatu and what he brings to the table, why am I profiling him, Stacy? Because this is a guy that can make a difference at the cornerback spot. And when you look at the needs for the Seahawks, corner is definitely a position of need. I know they went and assigned Akilah Witherspoon out there. I think it's a good signing, has great potential there, but you need to bring in competition and you need to bring in good talent. And if you're going to do that, not through free agency, but you're going to do that with young, talented players, Ifeatu Melifonwu would be fantastic for what the Seahawks want. Why? Because he's 6'3", 205 pounds. He is a very unique talent. He ran his 40-yard dash, Stacy, at that size. He ran a 4.48. His vertical leap, Stacy, 41.5-inch vertical.
Solid.
Now, you look at Ifeatu and what he brings to the table. Last year in 2020, he started all 11 games for the Syracuse squad. He earned third-team All-ACC honors, 55 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, 1 interception, and 9 pass breakups. Melifonwu has the size and toughness as a safety. When you watch him play the game, Stacy, you see him come downhill. He is a willing tackler, and you know that the Seahawks, when they're watching that tape, the scouting department, Pete Carroll, they love it. They love watching his physical play. But the unique aspect of Melifonwu is that he has elite physical traits that make him a potential star at the cornerback position. The positives for him is he is a player that plays downright physical and is downright dominant at times as a cover corner in press coverage with his length, strength, and athleticism. You see him really flash and really sign at times. He responds and reacts extremely well to the ball in the air. He has tremendous length. So when he's dealing with speedy receivers downfield, Stacey, you see that not only does he have the speed to run with them, but he has the length to really close the gap that is there, any separation that is created by the receivers. And I think he does understand how to utilize his body and his traits very, very well. He also has a knack for getting his hands on the ball, whether that's in pass breakups or interceptions. And as I mentioned before, he is physical. He is a plus tackler in all aspects. Downhill in the run game, in open space. I really like Melly Fonwu. Well, Jake, you're talking about him like we're not even going to see him. He's a first-round talent from all the measurables that you see. Well, hold on just a second. Melly Fonwu is not a first-round, surefire player necessarily. He could go in the first round, but I think he's a candidate to maybe slip and fall into the late second round. Reason for that being is that he doesn't have a great body of work, meaning that he had some missed time in games in 2018, 2019 due to injury. They weren't significant or severe injuries that held him out for a number of games, or that you would be worried about his medical history, but that is a factor. So his production in 18 and 19 weren't necessarily, jumping off the charts, but in 2020, he had a fantastic year. And obviously with his size, he plays exactly the way that the Seahawks would love to have. Now, one of the other knocks on him is that he too often, with his size and his physical traits, he plays way too often soft. Like, you watch him on film and you wonder why he is off around 7-8 yards and he is in a backpedal rather than being more towards the line of scrimmage and using his length and being more of an intimidating factor and enforcer out on the edge. Like we've seen in the past with Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner and some of those guys, he has that ability. But he tends to choose not to play that way. So what that tells me is he's hesitant, Stacey. At times, he's not as fully confident in his abilities to play in that press man coverage all the time. And he likes to keep things in front, likes to rally and tackle rather than be aggressive and read offensive concepts and go and jump the ball. So when you talk about a true ball-hawking corner, Melly Fonwu at this stage of his career has not shown that or has displayed that. And so I think there's other corners that are more intriguing across the country that are more ball hawking type of corners. I don't think that that should be a concern to Seahawks fans. Why? Because Pete Carroll in this cover three defense, there's a good mix of both. And he doesn't want you to get beat over the top. He teaches that famous kick step for corner technique. And so you can play, off and soft and rally and tackle and be able to use your eyes and zone coverage to read and react to the ball. And I think that they would do a great job implementing Ifatu Melifonwu's, talents and skill sets into their defensive scheme, knowing that if they want to go cover one and press man coverage, they've got a guy who's got unique skills and traits that can really become an elite player in those situations. So Ifatu Melifonwu, Stacey, to me, would be a home run get if he was to fall at 56 to the Seattle Seahawks.
Now, I'm going to make a Richard Sherman comparison here for you guys, but it's not for the reasons that you think, because Ifatu and Richard have different body types, different legacies at their respective schools, different athletic backgrounds, with Richard Sherman having transitioned from wide receiver, Ifatu having played a couple different positions, but primarily entering as cornerback. So, granted, different backgrounds. What I'll say is this. One of the things that I have found, and Jake, you found as well in covering the Seahawks, is that like many other teams that spend so much time researching these guys, months and months and sometimes years researching and scouting guys that they plan on drafting, sometimes the smallest things make the difference. Every guy that's going to be a standout in the draft is going to be a freak athlete. Every guy is going to be able to run fast. Every guy is going to be able to jump high. Sometimes there are guys that are going to blow you away, like DK Metcalf. And then other times you're going to have guys that kind of fall into a pool of like abilities. And so what the Seahawks have done, from my observation, I'm sure other teams have done this, but certainly what they've done, is looked at the things that have set guys apart. So for some of those things. For instance, about Ifatu, he's an economics major at a tough school at Syracuse, was a multi-time honor roll 2019 All-ACC academic team. He's a smart dude. And so I think that sometimes what the Seahawks have favored, not always the guy that's numbers most jump off the charts, but the guy that'll put in the hard work. I think that's what they really loved about Richard Sherman. Richard Sherman wasn't some freak physical athlete coming out of the draft. He was a guy that had a lot of great ability, but most importantly, a really smart guy that had a ton of work ethic. And Jake, you've talked about this before. You would see Richard Sherman all the time, constantly working out, constantly practicing on getting better, constantly trying to find ways where he felt like, if I'm not going to be as physically gifted as someone else, I'm going to outwork them, I'm going to outsmart them. Those are the kinds of qualities that end up getting you further than just being a freak athlete. And I think you can see some of those with Ifatu Olunfanwu.
Well, that's a great point that you make there. And the word that the Seahawks typically use is grit. Does this guy have grit? And has he been through difficult circumstances and has been able to show that level of toughness? And I think with Ifatu Melifonwu, he is a guy that, look, he comes from an athletic family, an athletic background. He is a young man that you would love to have in your locker room, as you had just outlined. Just an incredibly hard worker, has his head on straight, and I think that you talk about a pedigree. You know, he's got his brother who's playing in the league right now. I think that he has the ability to really show off his physical traits and really take the next step at the next level. In the NFL, I believe that if you put him in this cover three scheme and man-to-man situations and press coverage, you're going to really see Ifatu Melifonwu really develop into one of the league's, you know, top corners, best young corners, and would continue to add to that depth that you have with DJ Reed, Akilah Witherspoon, Trey Flowers. Just overall, his size and length is something that the Seahawks have always desired, always craved since Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner. I believe he brings that level of physicality, that type of play here in Seattle. I think you just got to work that out of him just a little bit more, because he does like to play in off coverage just a little too often for my liking. You're 6'3", 205 pounds. Use your long arms. Use your physical gifts more often. And the difference between him and Richard Sherman, Stacey, Richard Sherman ran like a 4.6. Ifatu runs a 4.4. Like, this guy can really play. This guy can really fly. And Richard, you know, had to use more of his smarts and his instincts to make him play that fast. And I think with Ifatu, if he continues to be the quick study, the hard worker that you have outlined and that I have outlined him to be, I think he puts this thing all together. And I think he, like as I said before, he's a home run signing for the Seahawks if he is able to land and fall down to 56. And I don't know if that's going to be the case, because these measurables, these traits, are really hard to pass up for any other team out there in the league. And you're getting more and more teams right now defensively than you've ever had before that play the same style of coverage that the Seattle Seahawks play. You've got the Jets now. You've got the Las Vegas Raiders. You've got Dan Quinn in Dallas that also plays. So you've got four teams that are kind of looking for the same thing out at that cornerback position.
Yeah, and I think that there is an argument that you could make if you wanted to, where the Seahawks could save some of that draft stock. Maybe they draft an offensive lineman higher and instead take a chance on a lower drafted cornerback and trust that Pete Carroll, one of the best DB coaches, DB background coaches in the league, can help coach that guy up. I think that that's certainly an angle you could take. However, I would be completely fine with the Seahawks going cornerback with their first pick. Like, I would be very okay with this. I know that they need help along the offensive line. I know they're going to need to think of what to do with, for instance, Ethan Posick after this year, after Dwayne Brown's, you know, next year or so in the future. They're going to need to figure out what kind of moves to make there on the offensive line. That said, I am concerned when you have multiple parts of a position group that are untested. Your two safeties are going to be two of the better safeties in the league, at least as far as the safety tandem goes. Your two corners have a lot of promise. I loved what DJ Reed was able to do. Akilah Witherspoon was drafted above Shaquille Griffin. Maybe he has a bounce back season, whatever it may be. You've still got untested guys there. I don't love knowing that that's on either side, that that's at right and left corner.
I agree, and that puts you in a unique spot. I will give you that. But they also were in that spot a long, long time ago, Stacey, and it ended up working out for them. It ended up working out for them back in the Legion of Boom days, where you had a bunch of young guys who had a chip on their shoulder looking for something to prove. And can you recreate that? That will remain to be seen. But I think they've been down this road before. And the one thing that you do have, Stacey, that gives me a comfort is that you have two great safeties to be working with. You don't have to revamp and rework the entire secondary. It is your cornerback positions, and really you just want to continue to add depth and competition with elite level talent. And I think that is why I profile Ifeatu Melifonwu, because he fits that bill.
All right, that wraps up today's Seahawks draft profile. Going to continue those leading up to the draft. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. It's 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass.
With Jake and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Question number one here, Jake. Lost my spot here. What defensive player has to step up for the Seahawks defense in 2021?
The player that has to step up into a new role, the role that I think that he's going to embrace and that he's going to excel very, very well at, is Puna Ford. Puna Ford now has to take on a new role, and that is the role of filling in as the starting three technique for Jaron Reed. He got to play it a little bit more than he did a season before his rookie year, and even into his rookie year in 2018 and 2019, where he solely was the one technique and really was kind of the plugger for the defense. He got to play a little bit of three technique last year, and I think he really excelled at it. Hence the reason why the Seahawks wanted to get him a 2-year extension, rather just a 1-year, restricted free agent tender, and have to go down this road again. They have him locked up for 2 more years. They're going to ask him to play a role that Jaron Reed, I think, did very, very well. And you look at Puna Ford, what he was able to do last year. He had 2 sacks, which was his best. He had 40 tackles, which was his best. 8 tackles for loss, 9 quarterback hits. Last year, he really, really made a big jump and improvement from his first 2 seasons as a Seahawk. And so I'm really excited about Puna Ford, what he can do. As Justin Britt always said, he has this God-given leverage with his height, his unique height, and his long arms. I think he can really be disruptive, but he's going to have to step up in a big way for the Seahawks now that they're asking him to be their starting three technique.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis.
What
does
the loss of Quentin Dunbar mean for the Seahawks cornerback room?
Great question.
Thanks. I wrote it myself.
Yeah, I know. Look, his departure doesn't leave a hole close to the one left by Shaquille Griffin, who's now with Jacksonville. We know that. I'm not comparing the two. What I will say is that you now have one less free agent option at what's become Seattle's thinnest position group on defense. And that's notable. So as underwhelming as some listeners feel that Dunbar's stint was, and you're right about that, he still earned one of Pro Football Focus's best coverage grades the year prior and has a much higher ceiling than last year would indicate. Don't forget, by the way, he was playing with a nagging knee injury throughout his worst performance of the season against the Buffalo Bills, later placed on IR and undergoes season-ending knee surgery. So I don't think that Seahawks fans ever saw quite what Quentin Dunbar could be. Would he have been your future at cornerback? No, because even when he was with Washington, even at his best, he still struggled with injuries, still struggled with consistency sometimes, but he still would have been a pretty solid option to compete in a room that's now down to just a couple experienced guys. So who do they have? You've got 2 draft picks and you've got 2 former 49ers. You've got Trey Flowers, your 2018 draft pick, who does have starting experience. He started a year at right corner. You've also got your 2019 draft pick, Ugo Amadi, though he'll be competing at nickel. So kind of have him in the room, but he's out really of that outside corner conversation. Then you've also got DJ Reed, who was great for you last year, and Akella Witherspoon, who's looking to get kind of a second win to his career. He was benched a couple times in San Francisco, had games when he was great and when you saw everything he could be, and then had games where he struggled and felt not like a bust because he was a late second-day guy, but felt like a guy where they were going to consider moving on. So he is looking for a resurgence to his career in Seattle. I'm still concerned about what this position's going to look like, which is exactly why I said don't be surprised if the Seahawks add to this group in the draft later this month.
Third down. Jake, what amazes you about the quarterback frenzy we're about to see atop this year's NFL draft?
Well, I mean, we're going to see a record 5 quarterbacks taken within the top 10. I mean, that's insane. I mean, the Carolina Panthers, one of the reasons why they ended up trading for Sam Darnold is because they realized even at number 8, with the number 8 pick in the NFL 2021 draft, that they would not be able to get a quarterback that they really like. And now you're going to move on, bring Sam Darnold in. So, as we know, that not all these quarterbacks are going to hit. You're going to have Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones most likely go in the top 10 of this draft. How's it all going to work out?
Right.
How's it all going to pan out? I mean, you look at the 49ers. They traded up into this draft, gave up significant capital for essentially a 50-50 proposition. Now, maybe it might be more if you really feel like you've got a beat on a quarterback, but you just never know, right? I mean, look at Deshaun Watson. Look at Patrick Mahomes in their draft class. They fell down into the mid-tiers, and Patrick Mahomes falling all the way to 15th. He ends up being the best quarterback in the draft. It is an absolute, you know, just shooting at the wall, shooting at darts, and hoping that your dart lands in the right spot with your eyes closed. You just don't know if they're going to work out. And I think that that's going to be the fascinating aspect about this year's draft, is you're seeing so many teams that are so incredibly desperate to find that franchise quarterback.
Fourth down. Youth versus experience at cornerback, Jake. What are you choosing?
Youth versus experience. This, is to me, is the biggest question for the Seahawks that you have to answer and address. The reason why you go youth is because there are a lot of unique cornerback prospects. And we're going to profile a lot of guys that, we did, you know, Ifeatu Melifonwu, and he is unique. 6'3", 205 pounds. There are a lot of guys that fit this profile for the Seahawks this coming draft, and guys that you're going to see fall a good chunk. And so when you're talking about your second round pick, your fourth round pick even, you're going to have some intriguing names and intriguing options waiting there for you. And I think that they would be very inclined to want to go the inexpensive route and to not just have a one-year rental, but to have somebody that they can build and grow and develop, because DJ Reed is up on his contract next year. Trey Flowers will be up on his contract next year. Akilah Witherspoon will be he's only on a one-year deal. At some point, you've got to build towards the future. And so I could easily see them using a cornerback selection to build to that depth in that competition and build for the future. However, don't rule out them going with an experienced corner like Richard Sherman, like a Casey Hayward Jr., like a Breshad Breeland. Why? Because they've been there, they've done that. And guys, especially like Casey Hayward Jr. and Richard Sherman, they know how to get their hands on the ball. They know how to turn the ball over and take the ball away. And that's something that Pete Carroll loves. And both of those guys have played in this defense before. So those are things that you are evaluating and trying to go through. And I don't think Casey Hayward Jr. or Richard Sherman, for that fact, are going to be very expensive post-draft. So you've got both options available to you, but if you're asking me what I think they do, I think they go with youth versus experience.
Now, unrelated here, but we're going to be jumping into the timeline in a second. And as a reminder for you guys, the skipper, Scott Servais, joining us in about 30 minutes for the Scott Servais Show. If there is a sports story, so a specific topic that always gets you riled up, I don't mean like the NBA. I mean like whether the NBA lottery is you know,
Fixed
or whatever. Is there a topic that no matter what, you will talk about it to death and get fired up every time?
Yeah.
What's yours?
Well, mine's the whole FBI wiretapping
of course
Arizona
it is.
Basketball.
Bear down.
Like,
bear down.
Bear down.
Jake, what about you? Because I know what mine is right off the top.
I don't know. I don't know if there's anything that just truly, truly gets me fired up.
How about
other
the
than
Astros?
How about like a Seahawks mismanaged third down or fourth down situation where you have
time
to call a timeout instead of having the play ready to go? That one might get me fired up every
third
time.
Third and fourth down decisions make Jake mad. What always gets me fired up and what I can talk about endlessly is always going to be the Astros. It's always going to be the Astros scandal.
One.
And guess what? I got an update for you guys. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Do you think you have what it takes to pick the winner for this year's Masters? Well, if you do, head to 710sports.com/win. That is 710sports.com/win. Guess the champion and their winning score, and you could end up winning the ultimate premier golfing pass. That's a round of golf for you and three friends at 10 premier golf courses. Details at 710sports.com/win. Jake, would you take me and Curtis if you won?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah?
Totally.
Oh,
totally would.
That's very nice.
He'd take me for sure. I mean,
oh, he would take me for sure. It's really just kind of the.
Well,
he would take you out of politeness.
I mean, am I going to give you my real answer or am I trying to be polite here?
You should be honest and real.
Okay. Well, I'm probably not going to take.
Okay.
You.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
No, you guys. I'm going to take my kids with me, obviously. I mean, it's the Masters.
Tell me I can't be better than Jackson on the course.
I don't think you can.
No, you can't.
I think Jackson could give you a run for your money out on the links.
No way.
I'm offended.
I'm sorry. Or I would take my dad, or I would take family. I mean,
sure.
Come on. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, guys.
You get 10 passes.
Ten. I mean, that's pretty legit.
Well, no, sorry. You and three friends.
Now, the problem is that, look, the reason why we can't participate is we have people like Curtis who ruin it for all of us.
Yeah,
It's not the fact that we work here and it wouldn't look good if we had won this
right,
own competition.
Right,
it's people like Curtis who, trivia-wise, they just know things. They just know. If I was to bet anything, mm-hmm. I would bet my life that Curtis would know how to pick this. The winner of the Masters.
Reminds me that I do have to work on something where we can have callers call in and take on trivia in, I'm going to do like some baseball themed, maybe like a whole of baseball themed, certainly get some Mariners questions in there, but I'm going to be working on some baseball trivia stuff going on. There's probably not going to be prizes. It's just going to be for respect and a chance to defeat Curtis. Although I don't know that anyone will. Truly, I don't.
Probably won't,
but I need to think of a way to get you guys some shots. All right, speaking of baseball, moving on here to our story about the Astros that I promised you guys. Astros manager Dusty Baker, who I love, but he was none too pleased with Angels fans throwing actual garbage cans onto the field. And so he took it upon himself to defend the Astros by basically saying people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Like he actually may have used that analogy. So first of all, start with cut three right here. This is him explaining like, hey, think carefully about this.
You can tell the amount of hostility and the amount of hatred in the stands. And, you know, how many in the stands have never done anything wrong in their life, or you know we paid the price for it. How many people have not cheated, on the test or whatever at some point in time? I mean, it's easy, if you live in glass houses, but I don't think anybody lives in glass houses.
Now, what Dusty's trying to say, and again, it's not Dusty's fault that he's been left to clean up this mess that was left. And honestly, if it was still AJ Hinch, I still would have felt bad for AJ, but I especially feel bad for Dusty, who was the perfect and is the perfect manager to bring in to try to smooth some of this over, make them a more palatable organization. The problem is that the argument doesn't really hold up because in theory, yes, no one's perfect. It's a tough look to try to be cruel to someone when it's something that anyone could have done.
Sure.
The problem that so many baseball fans would tell you is, well, the Astros weren't punished. And, well, there was no consequence for this. So you got a little bit of a justice from the people situation going on.
Yeah, you do. And
also, you were banging garbage cans.
But
it's
also,
so easy to make fun
of. Hold on. At the end there, he said, I don't. People are living, throwing stones in glass houses, which is a great saying, and I totally get where he's coming from. And they said, "Yeah, I don't think that anybody does live in glass houses."
Which is true.
It's like what?
Dude,
what are you saying,
does.
Dusty?
I don't
like
think
you're just
does.
Like going on. Can we go to cut number four here?
Yeah.
He's like, "Hey, don't take it out on us because you got to
think
about
of
the kids. Think of the children."
I think that sometimes we need to look at ourselves before you. Spew hate on somebody else. Like I said, it's a sad, situation for America to me. When you when you hear things, I mean, what are the kids supposed to think in the stands? Or, you know, and some of them are kids, they're following their parents. And it's sad to me. Like I said, it, you know, people make mistakes. And, you know, we paid for ours. And, you know, we say leave it alone.
Really, Dusty, you paid for yours? How? How on earth did you pay for what they did?
They didn't.
Dusty, you weren't a part of this, so I get it. But don't try to come at fans for taking a little bit of justice for one of the more ridiculous stories that we have ever witnessed, ever seen. And anybody that tries to tell me that they that the Major League Baseball should not have ripped their World Series, their championship, and there are plenty of you out there, I can't get on board with you. Like, I understand your argument, but at the same time, then what qualifies you getting ripped of your championship? You cheated. You flat out cheated of the highest order. And you fired a couple you fired a manager and a GM within your organization. Who cares? The players that were a part of that, that operated that system every single day, every single night, as they cheated their way through a championship, are still playing, still making their money, no repercussions whatsoever. To me, this is what you get. This is what you get. Just own it. Ride it out. You're going to deal with it for a year, Dusty. It's not going away. Just own it. Don't try and hide behind the children in this aspect.
Now, Jake, you are a father of, soon to be father of three. Curtis, you're about to become a first-time father, so Willa can't talk yet. But just imagine one day that she's asking you, or Jake, that your kids are asking you, why are we booing? Are you gonna really have the guts to tell them, you're right, why are we booing?
No,
we
because
be
I would tell
people.
Them that they're cheaters.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like my dad sat there and I had fake money, Monopoly money, as I was throwing it at A-Rod when he came up to the plate and he returned
son.
To the Mariners.
Oh,
we
no.
are fans. You teach them how to be fans.
No.
Now, don't be cruel, right? Like, I'm not sitting there
keep
and my father never taught me to, you know, cuss at players or to, you know, flip them the bird or whatever ridiculous things that I've seen children do, by the way, when I'm in a bus as a opponent running into a stadium. I've seen, you know, the backside of people as we have run into going into stadiums.
Sure.
I've seen many middle
butts.
Fingers.
All right.
I have seen children. You know, giving me the business.
Uh-huh.
And that is not something that I will tell my kids to do. But in response to this situation, absolutely. And when you're not held accountable, there is no part of this process. There is forgiveness to move on. And that's what I think Rob Manfred, that's why I think he handled the situation so poorly, because it actually put the Astros in a worse position. If they had just stripped the title away, because now you have fans everywhere across baseball. And I hope Mariners fans, all 9,000 of you, you better be giving the Astros the business when they come into town, or else I will be disappointed in every single last one of you. That to me is what Major League Baseball put upon us. And Dusty Baker, if you got a problem with it, go after Rob Manfred, not the fans, because they're handling themselves in a way that I think is justifiable based off of what we've been given.
All right. We've got three young Seahawks stars with the most pressure riding on them this year. Each of us, Jake's walking off. Each of us have an answer. Text in your 710-710. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. I asked you guys who are three young Seahawks stars with the most pressure riding on them this year. You just have to think of one, because that's what each of us did. But let's see. Jake, why don't you go ahead and get us started? The text line right now, I'll be checking it out intermittently to see if anyone agrees with us. But who's your first? The young Seahawks star with the most pressure riding on him for 2021.
I don't even think this is close, guys.
Okay, well,
I think the young Seahawks star with the most pressure is Jamal Adams.
Okay.
All right? Jamal Adams is set to get a contract that will obliterate the safety market. He will not get a contract in line with the safety market. He is going to get a contract that is in line with one of the better defensive players in football. That is what he is set to get. anywhere from $18 to $20 million. I would assume that it'll probably be more on the $18 million side of things, but Jamal Adams is going to get a mega deal. And it's fitting for all the reasons that he presents. I mean, he's a guy that can has unique traits of being able to get to the quarterback and be able to be your leading pass rusher of last year at 9.5 sacks. I think that you would like to see him be more proficient, meaning that you're not bringing him as often, but he's able to get home to the quarterback at a higher percentage. That means that you have a better, healthier pass rush overall, but he's still going to be a tremendous factor in that area. He's a guy who can be an enforcer and make a difference for your defense in the running game. He brings a level of energy and excitement and enthusiasm every single day that you want as a defensive player, as you want as a defensive coach. He's a guy that when I looked at him healthy in the second half of the season, Stacey, he was a much better cover safety than what people wanted to give him credit for. And I think that it's okay if his skill set is not geared toward him being a dynamic cover safety like Ed Reed. They knew that when they brought him here. Mm-hmm. They felt like, hey, we can help him grow. But once he got down the defense and he felt comfortable in his rules and responsibilities, you saw him play a much better brand of coverage football than we have seen the entire year. But if you're gonna get that type of contract, you've got to be dependable. You've got to show up and make plays. You've got to take the ball away. You've got to get to the quarterback. You've got to do it all. And I think that's what Bobby Wagner's seeing right now. When he's getting paid as much as he is right now, the expectations is, look, 130 tackles a year, that's not good enough for Seahawks fans. We need to see sacks. We need to see interceptions. We need to see, you know, tackles for loss. He's a six-year All-Pro in a row. And people are still doubting or talking about Bobby Wagner like he's washed up. That's crazy. But Jamal Adams is going to have to bring an insane level of production and make this defense truly elite and dominant for people to feel like all the capital that they gave up, all the money that they're going to pay to him will be worth it. So I think all the pressure's on Jamal Adams.
I think that's a great answer. He's one of their biggest stars. He's going to be one of their most expensive stars, and they gave up more for him than they have for any other player. Mine is a little more off the cuff. It's a little weirder, but hear me out on this one. I chose Daryl Taylor. Daryl Taylor can truly come in and get one sack and be more productive than he was in all of last year, 100% increase from the year prior. But the reason I chose Daryl Taylor is twofold. Number one, I think the pass rush could use some long-term options. I would love for Seattle to enter an offseason not wondering who the leading edge rusher is going to be. I'd love for them to enter an offseason thinking, and of course you got Daryl Taylor at that Leo spot, so you're locked up there. Let's figure out where else you can add. You know what I mean? Like, cross off one hole that you don't have to fill in the offseason. The second part of that is the reverberations that it has on the rest of the franchise. You don't want, if you're John Schneider and Pete Carroll, to have yet another miss on a high second round pick that you, in the case of Daryl Taylor, traded up for, that you completely missed on, that didn't end up panning out for you. Malik McDowell, you know, like, it is a shame what happened for him. It's not anything to make light of in any way. At the same time, if you're looking at just from a business perspective, that ended up being kind of a stain for the Seahawks in terms of their drafting, and they aren't looking to repeat a mistake where they spend a lot of draft capital, limited draft capital, on a defensive lineman that doesn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis, who you got?
I got a guy who was just recently paid. That'd be Chris Carson. I think this is somebody that needs to show the Seahawks that I'm not just somebody that's going to play 80% of the games. I can put together a full 16-game schedule. And last year, he only played 12 games, only had 141 carries. Like, are those numbers of a feature back? Are those numbers that of somebody that you can give the ball to 20, 25 times a game? In his career, he's been that guy at times, but has he really shown that he can be that guy every single game that he goes out there and plays? And also, I mean, his future is at stake here because there is an opt-out after this season. The Seahawks can get out of this contract after the 2021 season. So his earning potential is very much on the line here. And you don't want to be one of those guys that we look at years down the road and be like, man, they were paying for past performance with that guy.
Yeah.
They weren't paying for future value.
Which too often happens with running backs.
And it's a great point, too, when you add in that option. Why do you add the option there in that particular year, right? After year one of the contract, you can decide year one, year two, right? And they chose year one. Why? Because of last year. Because you essentially felt like, and this is no disrespect to Chris Carson, that you had to baby him through the process of trying to keep him healthy going into the playoffs. He is such a valuable player and such a difference maker that you don't want to lose him before playoff time. He has to prove, to Curtis's point, that he can be that workhorse, that he can be healthy at the right times, and that he can continue to keep contributing to this offense and be dependable. I really like that one. And Stacey, yours with Daryl Taylor makes a lot of sense, because here is the other aspect that you were pointing out that I think is pivotal. You have Kerry Hyder Jr. You have Carlos Dunlap. You have Benson Mayoa as of right now. Those three guys are aging veterans. Those three guys are under 1 or 2 year type of contracts that you can't depend on for them to be in their final year. Even with Carlos Dunlap getting a 2 year deal, I'm not banking that he's for sure going to be here in 2022. And if you have Daryl Taylor that steps up and he adds and he looks like he is everything that they were hoping he could be, now you're not nearly as worried about that position. And I fully agree with that one. It's a pretty good one. And I think there's a couple other guys out there, and we'll have to return to this. But the nice thing is that we do have multiple stars. If you think about it, there are multiple young stars potentially that you're going to have on this roster that can make a big impact for you.
Yeah, like you said, Jake, other two answers on the text line make sense. Two first-round picks, Jordan Brooks and LJ Collier. All right, again, this hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by the Pro Club. Mariners fans, do not go anywhere. The skipper, Scott Servais, he joins us next.